Chapter 4. Nile. The second dream is quieter than the first. There's a cavern of some kind, with what looks like a dais cut into the stone, murmuring voices in a language she can't quite make out. An unfamiliar scent in the air, like incense. Torchlight flickering golden along the keen edge of a blade. A woman's thin face, large eyes dark and serious. The knife cuts into her palm, a slice of bright-hot pain, and dark green blood oozes up around it. She flexes her hand, and Nile can feel the sting of it. When she wipes the blood away with a cloth, the skin is already unblemished again beneath it. The woman does not smile, but there is satisfaction in her eyes. Nile doesn't jolt awake this time, but the dream leaves her feeling unsettled nonetheless. After tossing and turning fruitlessly in her bunk for a while, she gives up, pulling a hoodie on over her sleep clothes and making her way out to the bridge. There's no need for a pilot when the ship is at warp. The computer handles the navigation on its own, and there are very loud alarms if anything should go wrong, which is rare. There's not much to see, either. But Nile has spent as much of her long life on starships as planet-bound, by now, and she derives a certain comfort from the captain's chair. It gives her the illusion of control. She's not really expecting to find Joe ensconced at the helmsman station. He's curled into the chair with his feet tucked under him in a manner that can't possibly be comfortable, sketching. For an instant, she wants to turn right back around again. She wasn't looking for company. But he looks up and smiles, so she quashes the irrational flare of annoyance and joins him. "Is that actual paper?" she asks, dropping down into her own chair. "Wow." Joe shrugs. "Call me old-fashioned, but I just prefer the feel of it." She can't criticize that. Virtual art is wonderful in its own right, but she still prefers the tangible herself. Paint on a canvas, wet clay being molded under her hands, the impossibly smooth cut of sculpture in marble. Less practical on a ship, but what can you do? "Trouble sleeping?" Joe asks, after a few long minutes of quiet together. "My body is still adjusting to ship time, but what's your excuse?" "Dreams, the usual." Joe hums, his pencil scratching against the paper for just a moment more. He holds up the sketch for her appraisal. It's the woman's face from her dream, narrow and angular, with a small, delicate nose and a pointed chin. Her eyebrows slash upward. Dark hair is pulled back from her face, severely, revealing the pointed tips of her ears. "Sometimes I need to remind myself why it's worth the hassle," Joe murmurs. "Alien protocols and Starfleet captains in clandestine meetings, upending our lives all over again. But she's family, though she doesn't know it yet." Nile flexes her hand on her lap, wincing at the phantom pain. "I dreamed of her cutting into her own palm. Green blood." "Probing the boundaries of what is now possible," Joe agrees, testing her own hypothesis. "The space around her, it felt almost like a temple to me." "Maybe. I don't know much about Vulcan religious practices." "Neither do I, though I think theirs is more of a philosophy than a faith as we would consider it." He studies the drawing, then sets it down on his console. "I wonder what her name is." "I wonder how she's taking all this," Nile counters. "She seemed pretty calm in my dream, but, well, Vulcan, so who knows?" She shifts restlessly in her chair, fingers twitching against the console. Maybe she should pick up sketching herself, just for the distraction. It's been a while since she indulged in that kind of hobby. Because she hasn't had time for it, what with keeping this ship in the sky with just her and Booker. She's trying real hard not to resent Joe for that at the moment. "Vulcans feel just as deeply as anyone else," Joe says softly. "They just prefer not to let emotion dictate their actions. You know how she's feeling right now, because you were there yourself, not very long ago." Nile pinches the bridge of her nose, tamping down irritation at the lecture. She knows he doesn't mean it that way. Alone, scared, confused. The dream flashes behind her eyes again, that sense of satisfaction. But also powerful, unbreakable. "It's a volatile time, those first few deaths and awakenings," Joe muses. and so very lonely. I know that your own introduction to immortality was not ideal, what with Merrick and all that entailed, but I am glad we found you so quickly all the same. It was not always thus. Niles heard enough of their stories, by now, to know that it had taken months for Andy and the boys to track down Booker, the first time, that it had taken Andy something like 100 years to find Quinn in the first place. She can't remember how long Joe and Nikki had been on their own before meeting the women, but you had Nikki right from the start, though. Joe rests his elbow on the console, propping his chin up on his hand. Yes and no. And though we were already bound together in some ways, it was the blind leading the blind, one might say. We were just as lost and lonely and confused, and having only each other to turn to was as much a curse as a blessing at first. I would not change a minute of it now, of course, and perhaps we did have it easier overall, but that didn't make it any less difficult at the time. I get that, Niall sighs, and I know it's not a contest. It's just weird being on the other end of it now. She's gonna want answers, and I've got nothing to give her. He smiles. You have more to give her than you might know, and you're not alone. We've all got your back on this, boss. Something clenches in her chest at the casual nickname. She sits with it quietly for a while longer, letting it settle, then says, Maybe I just can't wrap my head around the thought of one of us never having known Andromache the Scythian. When she manages to look back over at Joe, he's staring down at the sketch of the Vulcan woman's face. Yeah, he murmurs. Me neither. They emerge from warp about 3 standard days later, at the coordinates Quinn acquired. How she managed to send and receive private, fully encrypted transmissions to a Starfleet captain in active service was something that had Booker shaking his head in appreciation, and that Niall preferred not to think too hard about. You know, Niall remarked once, for someone who's spent the digital revolution underwater, it's unnerving how quickly Quinn picked up 23rd century hacking. She's always been clever, Nikki replied with a faint smile. Far more so than Joe or I. She used to be the one who forced Andromache to adopt new technologies as quickly as possible, from crossbows to dynamite. We could hardly keep up with her. The coordinates led them to a space station orbiting a planet in the Epsilon Ceti system. Pleasure planet, from what I remember, Booker says. Peaceful, lots of tourists and tropical resorts. One of the ships I served on, we had Shoreleap here once. Nikki lifts an eyebrow. Sounds enjoyable. Booker shrugs, lips twitching. I don't remember much, so it must have been good. They definitely never let that particular crew set foot there again. Well, don't get too excited, because we're not making planetfall this time, Niall says. Coordinates are for some shitty cantina on the space station itself. But I don't see any enormous Constitution-class vessels in dock right now. Maybe Jim's running late. I doubt he pulled his whole ship off course just to meet with us, Quinn says, rolling her eyes. I certainly would not, if I were him, not for a group of mercenaries he met once as a child. We weren't mercenaries on Tarsus, Booker says, quiet but firm. Not for that kid. Niall trusts his gut instinct on this one. For all Booker's gruff demeanor, he's a real softy when it comes to kids, and he's good with them. Not that Jim's a kid anymore, of course. Well, we'll find out soon enough, but my guess is you're both right. He's not gonna bet his whole ship on it without meeting us first, but he'll be here. Tourist trap like this is a good way to fly under the radar in the meantime. After some discussion, Niall and Quinn go alone to handle the meeting, leaving the guys on the ship. They don't want Jim to feel surrounded. It's been 15 years since they last saw him, no telling yet what kind of man he's become. Maybe Quinn's not the most obvious choice for Niall's backup, but she knows Vulcans better than any of them, and in the end, it's not really Jim they need right now. It's his Vulcan officer. And in a weird way, Quinn compliments Niall just because they're so damn different from each other. Niall doesn't pretend to understand the way Quinn's mind works. She's got the same ancient and unknowable vibe that Andy used to have, But that's an asset when it comes to this sort of situation. She'll notice things that Niall doesn't. How did you convince him to meet with us anyway? Niall asks, once they're ensconced in a grimy booth in the corner of the cantina. Quinn smirks. I appealed to his spirit of adventure. He's a daredevil, you can see it in his file. And anyone willing to accept a 5-year exploratory mission must have a taste for new challenges. You know, if we pull this off as planned, it could be a pretty boring retrieval, Niall can't help but point out. It won't be, Quinn says, with an ominous degree of certainty. None of us have ever awoken to a time of peace. We're drawn to chaos, one way or the other. This new girl won't be any different. Niall sighs. Loving your optimism as always, Quinn. Quinn shrugs, unconcerned. 2 highly questionable drinks into the evening, Jim Kirk saunters up to their booth. He's taller than Niall expected, mostly because her mental image is still that of a scrawny, underfed teenager. The intervening years have been very kind to him. Ladies, he says with an exaggerated leer, mind if I squeeze in? Despite his outward swagger, those electric blue eyes are wary. Niall imagines that Tarsus isn't the only hard lesson he's learned in life so far. There are echoes of that 14-year-old's desperate bravado in him even now. She focuses on her memory of that child on Tarsus and gives him her warmest smile. It's good to see you again. Do you still go by Jim, or is there something else you'd prefer we call you? Jim's fine. Instead of sliding into the booth himself, he grabs a nearby chair and swings it around to sit on it backward at the end of the table, legs splayed, resting his arms across its back. What names are you going by these days? They actually don't bother with aliases much anymore, except when it comes to official documentation. Their most elaborate covers were during their service in Starfleet, but since then, they've reverted back to using their own first names, with a variety of surnames as the situation requires. The boys have their nicknames. Niall will always just be Niall. And no one has ever dared suggest Quinn try on a new name. She's had enough taken from her already. Niall, is all she says. And this is Quinn. I don't know how much you remember. I remember, Jim snaps, then sighs, his shoulders slumping a little. Wish I didn't, most days. Spent a few years trying everything I could think of to forget. But yeah, I remember you all just fine. And Booker, and Joe, and Nikki. They still around? They're back on our ship, Quinn says calmly. They will be happy to see you again, if you are willing, but we understand if you'd prefer to remain in a public space. Jim scrubs a hand across his face. There's nothing about this conversation that I want to have in public. You know, the identities of the miners who survived Tarsus were kept sealed. There's no indication of it anywhere on my public record, and I'd rather keep it that way. We will respect your preference for privacy, Quinn says. It is one that we also share. Jim snorts, glance darting between them. Yeah, no shit. You know, I did some digging once I joined Starfleet, trying to track your team down. No dice. My clearance level is pretty damn high these days, but all the official reports on Tarsus IV just state that the Defiant intervened to end the genocide and rescue the surviving colonists in response to a distress call. Starfleet never heard my fucking call. You did. How'd you erase yourselves entirely from their record of the incident? Lots of practice, Niall says dryly. Ha, right. I was seriously starting to think I'd, like, hallucinated the lot of you. He shakes his head. And then I get a message to my very private, incredibly secure comm line from one of my imaginary friends, out of the fucking blue. So you can't blame me for being curious. Quinn gives him a glint of a smile. Not at all. We were rather counting on it. So, you want to have this conversation in a shitty bar where any random tourist could walk in on us? Niall asks. Or would you be willing to come back to our ship? Jim looks between them again, then shrugs, grinning. What the hell. Who am I to turn down a private rendezvous with 2 beautiful women? Quinn purses her lips in distaste. I am far too lesbian for this. Jim laughs, loud and bright. After exchanging greetings with the rest of the team, they settle into the Scythian's dining area, the only place on the ship comfortable enough to accommodate them all at once. Well, apart from the bridge, but Niall's not quite willing to allow a Starfleet captain access to her own little command center. She knows it's a bit rough and ready, but it's hers, okay? "So you're trying to make Planetfall on New Vulcan," Jim says, eyebrows raised. "That's a hell of an ask. What makes you think I can get you in?" "You're the captain who brought down Nero 5 years ago," Niall points out. "That's gotta count for something, avenging their home planet like that." "And your first officer is Vulcan himself," Quinn adds. "Surely he has permission to visit his people whenever he wishes, within reason. I doubt Starfleet is stingy about granting one of its sole Vulcan officers a shore leave on New Vulcan, given the current political climate. Just because Spock can beam down whenever we're in range doesn't mean he's gonna take five complete strangers along for the ride with him." Quinn bats her eyelashes at him, very performatively. "But we aren't strangers, are we, little Jim?" Across the table, Joe and Nikki are barely suppressing their laughter. Booker shakes his head and takes a stiff gulp of coffee. "Stranger danger, maybe," Jim mutters, but he's grinning. "You gonna tell me why you want to see New Vulcan so badly? It's not exactly a party planet." This is a question they'd expected and discussed beforehand. Nikki is the one who answers. "We are looking for a certain researcher with the Vulcan Science Academy. We have reason to believe her life may be in grave danger. We intend to assist her, if we can." The best lies, Niall has learned, are those that hew as close to the truth as possible. Jim folds his arms across his chest, looking between them. "You think Vulcans can't protect their own?" "The threat may come from within," Nikki says quietly. "We wish to speak with her in person, that is all. If she does not want us there, we will go. But she may need a way off the planet herself, and quickly." "Okay," Jim drawls, stretching the word out. He looks more intrigued than suspicious. "Well, I never could resist a damsel in distress. Who is the lady anyway?" "She's a scientist, not a damsel," Quinn says, rolling her eyes. "And we don't know her name, but we can identify her visually." "Photo?" Joe flips open his sketchbook. "Will this do?" "Oh, retro, nice." Jim studies it, then looks back up at them. "I really hope you've got a better plan than flashing this sketch at every Vulcan you encounter." "We were hoping to start with your first officer, actually," Quinn says sweetly. "But don't you worry your pretty little head about us, Jimmy. We've been doing this for quite a long time. We'll manage." Jim leans back in his chair, bracing his arms behind his head. "You know, I'm a little concerned I'm about to become accessory to an abduction. Who's paying you for this?" Booker snorts. "If we were getting paid, we wouldn't need your help." "Hey, you can't blame a guy for wondering. Look, I owe you big time, I know that, but no one waltzes onto New Vulcan just because they've got a bad feeling about some anonymous scientist. You've never asked us why we were in the Tarsis system 15 years ago," Niall says, pressing her palms flat against the table. She doesn't raise her voice, she doesn't have to. Jim's attention snaps to her like she's an admiral in the fleet. "You know why we were there? Pure coincidence. We happened to be passing through, and we heard your distress call, so we came. That's all it was. We didn't know who you were, or what kind of trouble you were in. But you called for help, so we came. That's what we do." She taps Joe's drawing. "She's calling for help, Jim. So we need to get to her. Are you with us or not?" After a long moment, Jim sighs and gives her a wry smile. It's the most honest expression she's seen on his face yet today. "Yes, ma'am. Christ, Starfleet should hire you to make recruitment vids." She gives him her best ageless goddess smile, channeling the spirit of Andromache the Scythian. "And what makes you think they didn't?" End of chapter 4.